Hello, my name is Malcolm Greenbaum, and in this session, we'll be looking at the changes that have been made to entrepreneurs' relief in Finance Bill 2020. The first thing to note is that the relief itself, they're proposing to change the name to Business Assets Disposal Relief. That is a little bit controversial because it won't just apply when you sell a business asset. You have to be making a qualifying disposal. And in the case, of course, of an unincorporated business, you've got to be disposing of the whole business, or at least an identifiable part of it that can be run as a separate business by the purchaser. So the name is not that clever. I'm not entirely sure why the name needed to be changed. Maybe during the parliamentary process that will be addressed. Now, of course, the headline news was that lifetime gains that can qualify for this relief and therefore qualify for a 10% rate of tax, they've reduced from 10 million down to 1 million for disposals from budget day onwards, from the 11th of March 2020 onwards. Gains on previous disposals that have been made are generally unaffected. If you had a genuine gain on an asset that qualified for entrepreneurs' relief 2 years ago and you made a gain of 5 million, then you keep that 5 million worth of entrepreneurs' relief. You won't get any more now. You're ahead of the lifetime limit, but you'll keep the previous relief. But the government also decided to introduce some new anti-forestalling rules, which we'll need to look at fairly carefully. If the new anti-forestalling rules apply, then the £1 million limit will apply to the disposal, even though it was made before budget day, as opposed to the £10 million that previously existed. And that's done by a very clever change in the way that these things are worded. So it's the anti-forestalling rules that I really want to focus on initially here. The first anti-forestalling rule, all of these anti-forestalling rules are based on transactions that may have been entered into to trigger a gain for entrepreneurs' relief purposes when we really didn't necessarily want a gain to arise. And it uses Section 28(1) of TCGA as its trigger point, because that says that if you exchange contracts, then it's the exchange of contracts that is the disposal for tax purposes. So the government and HMRC believe that some taxpayers have put contracts into place which aim to create a gain, trigger a gain, to lock in the entrepreneurs' relief available before budget day. For example, by using rescindable contracts, where it could, in other words, they're trying to anticipate what might happen in the budget for the worst. But then if the worst doesn't happen, that they can later reverse that. So if the anti-forestalling rules apply, then the date of disposal is treated as the date of completion rather than when the contract is made. So therefore, as long as the contract was all done and dusted before budget day, this anti-forestalling rule can't apply. Let's have a look at some of the conditions for this first anti-forestalling rule. So firstly, if the contract is not between connected persons, then the anti-forestalling provisions won't apply if you can demonstrate that the contract wasn't entered into for the purpose of obtaining an advantage by using Section 28(1) of TCGA to trigger a disposal before budget day. And what the law, draft law, says is that if you're claiming entrepreneur's relief on any disposal that might fall within this anti-avoidance rule, you have to include a statement confirming that you didn't enter into the contract for the purpose of obtaining tax advantage simply by triggering a gain before budget day. That's a little bit tricky because we often use entrepreneur's relief as a reason for making a disposal. Secondly, if the contract is between connected persons, then the government is far more sensitive to what's gone on here, and therefore the parties have to demonstrate not only the fact that they entered into the contract without thinking about the tax advantage, but also that the contract was entered into wholly for commercial reasons. Now, that might well be the case. For example, if an individual has always been looking to retire, withdraw from the business, and they've been thinking about doing this for quite some time, and they have therefore decided to dispose of their business to a family member before budget day. As long as there is a paperwork trail, or the accountant can provide evidence that this was always in the mind of the taxpayer, irrespective of what might have happened to entrepreneurs' relief in the budget, then we might be saved from this anti-forestalling rule and we might have a £10 million lifetime gain available to us. Now, if you're going to claim entrepreneurs' relief, having triggered a disposal by exchanging contracts before budget day, but maybe not having completed the transaction till after budget day, and it's between connected persons, again, in the tax return of the person claiming the up to £10 million of lifetime gains, they'll have to make a statement confirming that this transaction was done wholly for commercial reasons. Now, at this stage, it's too early to understand what kind of factors HMRC are going to be thinking about when determining whether these anti-avoidance provisions are going to apply or not. But clearly, if they come across a transaction where exchange occurred before budget day and completion occurred afterwards, they're going to probably start asking questions, start inquiring into those tax returns. And it would be sensible for your clients in this position to consider how they would respond and the evidence they have if any inquiries are then later raised by HMRC. If they have done it all for genuine commercial reasons, they have absolutely nothing to worry about, but they have to have the evidence lined up to support what they've done. The second anti-forestalling rule is in a different context. Now, just to remind you that typically share reorganisations, share-for-share exchanges, they fall within Section 127 TCGA, which means that generally speaking, as long as it's not part of a tax avoidance scheme, then a share-for-share exchange is not a disposal for capital gains purposes. Section 135 TCGA extends that principle where there are share-for-share exchanges typically, but not always, but typically when a company is sold and the consideration is shares or other securities in the purchaser. But you'll also hopefully be aware that you can make an election, technically under Section 169Q of TCGA, but you can make an election which allows you to set aside the no disposal rule and allow the share-for-share exchange to create a gain, a chargeable gain, at that time. Now, that has often been used up until now in order to crystallise an entitlement to entrepreneurs' relief. So if, for example, I sold my company to a larger competitor and the terms were, and I've run this business for many, many years as an officer of the company, if I was to sell them my company and take shares in them, then I might end up owning less than 5% of the shares in the company that's bought my company. So when I come to sell those new shares I've now got, I'm not going to get entrepreneurs' relief. But under the share-for-share rules, those new shares have the same cost as my original shares. So I could end up potentially in the future with a large gain, but no entrepreneur's relief. So I would typically have made a Section 169Q election in that situation to trigger a gain on the share-for-share exchange so that I can crystallise entrepreneur's relief on that gain. And OK, I haven't got cash. It's not a cash deal. I've got to find the money to pay the tax, but at least the tax charge is only at 10% rather than possibly at 20%. Now, HMRC say that they've seen cases where they believe that share-for-share exchanges have been undertaken before the budget, simply with the intention that in the event that the Chancellor, for example, abolished entrepreneurs' relief or significantly curtailed the relief, that the taxpayer could then sometime later make a Section 169Q election to retrospectively treat that share-for-share exchange as a chargeable gain and therefore trigger entrepreneur's relief or business assets disposal relief, as we now call it at the moment, instead. So the anti-forestalling rule is designed to counter that kind of situation. It is quite specific in its application. So somebody who does dispose of their company to a larger competitor and ends up with less than 5% of the shares, they're still going to be able to trigger a disposal under Section 169Q and claim entrepreneurs' relief. And if that all happened before budget day, they'll still be entitled, if the share-for-share exchange took place before budget day, they'll still be entitled to claim their £10 million. There's no problem with that. So the anti-forestalling rule applies in one of two situations. The first situation, the first condition, is that that person, the persons, or their connected persons, we include them as well, who hold shares in the new company or control of the new company are substantially the same, that isn't actually defined by the law, which is interesting, as those who held the shares in the old company or controlled it immediately before the exchange. So there's been a share-for-share exchange, but the old people controlled the old company and they control the new company. Or the old people who hold shares in the new company are essentially the people who held shares in the old company. This idea of substantially the same, I don't know how we can get through without that actually somehow being defined, because that could lead to a whole wealth of cases to establish what that actually means. The second situation where this anti-forestalling rule kicks in is where the relevant shareholders, and those are simply the shareholders who were shareholders in the old company and are still shareholders in the new company after the share exchange, where those relevant shareholders, when you add them together, hold a greater percentage of the ordinary share capital of the new company straight after the share-for-share exchange as they held in the old company immediately before the exchange. And should they now make a disposal of the new shares, they would meet the criteria, meet the conditions for entrepreneurs relief or business assets disposal relief to apply. In both of these cases, any election you later made to retrospectively say, no, I want that share-for-share exchange to be treated as a disposal, that disposal date will be treated as the date you made the Section 169Q election. So if you're making that now, then you're making it in an era where the lifetime gains limit is £1 million. So only a million of the gain would be taxable at 10%. Let's take a look at an example so you can put it into context. Let's say that a husband and wife, they held 80% of the shares in a company in which they were the directors, and there's an employee who holds 20% of the remaining shares. They enter a share-for-share exchange on the 5th of March 2020, so just under a week before Budget Day, inserting a new holding company above the existing trading company. The couple, the husband and wife, then own 100% of the shares after the transaction because they bought out the employee, paying them cash, as part of this transaction. Let's assume this has been done purely for commercial reasons, and they've got clearance, so it can be treated as a proper share-for-share exchange, a no disposal, falling within Section 135 of TCGA. If they later decide to make an election under Section 169Q, that they want to treat this reorganisation as a disposal, then they would only be eligible for entrepreneurs relief or business assets disposal relief, on £1 million of gains each, even though they undertook this transaction apparently for commercial reasons. They meet the second condition of the second anti-forestalling rule. They own a larger percentage in the new company than they held in the previous company, and they're entitled to entrepreneurs relief on the new shares. With entrepreneurs relief being restricted to a lifetime limit of £1 million, it might be worth clients thinking about alternative ways to exit their company. And one possibility, which may not have been thought of previously, is the use of employee ownership trusts. Now, I would stress that this won't suit every situation, not by any means. And the vendor may well have to wait and hope that they will get paid by instalments later on. There are a lot of conditions for the transaction to qualify, but in a fairly straightforward situation where the vendor has no shareholding after the sale and the employees weren't major shareholders before the EOT was set up, it shouldn't be that difficult. Now, the conditions. The employees and the officers, the remaining employees and the officers, must be the only beneficiaries of the trust that is going to be used here. The exiting entrepreneur, the exiting shareholder, is going to sell their shares to the trust, or they can gift if they want to, it's up to them. But if they want money, if they want value from it, they might sell the shares to the trust. For tax purposes, that would be treated as a no gain, no loss disposal. No tax would arise for the vendor. if the shares were gifted to the trust, then the gift will be exempted from IHT, which is very unusual. Normally, gifts to trusts are chargeable events for IHT purposes. And the trust itself will be exempt from 10-year charges and exit charges thereafter. Now, what will typically happen is at the time of the disposal, the trust itself won't have any cash, won't have any money, certainly not enough to buy the shares. And therefore, the consideration would normally be owed by the trust to the vendor shareholder. What then would typically happen is, assuming that the company was successful after the transaction, the company would generate hopefully spare cash, which ordinarily it might pay out as a dividend to its shareholders. What the company can do instead is to simply gift any spare cash to the trustees. Now, that gift will not be a deductible expense because it's not incurred wholly and exclusively for the purpose of the trade. So the company isn't going to get tax relief on that gift. But by making a gift, there are no tax implications for the trust itself. The trust isn't taxed on gift income. If the company instead started paying dividends to the trust, then dividend income in a trust would generally be taxable at 38.1%, especially in this type of trust, which is discretionary in its nature. So the company would give cash to the trustees as and when it had spare cash, and the trustees would then use that money to gradually settle the selling price for the vendor. As a sweetener for the staff, they can get bonuses of up to £3,600 a year free of income tax. There are conditions. They've all got to be able to participate in this bonus scheme, although you can differentiate based on, for example, length of service. And although they're exempt from income tax on this bonus, rather bizarrely, they're not exempt from national insurance contributions. I don't know why, but they're not. But still, a tax-free bonus of up to £3,600 a year would be a very welcome benefit for an employee. Now, if you are the employees who are the beneficiaries of the trust, if the vendor is going to put the shares in the trust but be owed that consideration back, that's a bit like having an asset that has a full mortgage on it in the eyes of the trust. So in order for the employees to enjoy the benefits of the company, the capital growth of the company, they've got to grow the company to a value which is greater than the value when it went into the trust. Because then at some point later on, maybe many, many years hence, the trustees could either appoint the shares to the beneficiaries, to the employees, or they could sell the shares, if the trust deed allows them to do that, they could sell the shares to a third party and then distribute the cash to the beneficiaries. And of course, with the fact that the trustees owe the original selling price when the vendor created the trust back to that vendor, there's only going to be a profit element here if they can sell it for more than it was worth when it went into the trust. So just a chance for us to consider whether employee ownership trusts are a viable alternative exit route now that entrepreneurs relief or business assets disposal relief has now been limited to £1 million worth of lifetime gains. I hope that I've managed to explain those changes to you as clearly as I can. The anti-forestalling rules are not that straightforward, but hopefully you now understand them to advise your clients accordingly. Thank you for listening.